Colorado native Dan Young is in the third decade of a career as a landscape artist. He has representation in 8 galleries across the West. His work has appeared in at least 5 magazines devoted to Western art, and he has a new show at the Core Logos Gallery in Basalt. Dan joins Express Yourself after the opening reception last night in Basalt. Dan, welcome to KD&K.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Are you happy with the show?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a great turnout last night. Nice. I was very pleased.
How many pieces are in the...
I gave them 19 new paintings.
New. Wow, so you've been a busy man.
Yeah, whenever I'm having a show, I try to give them new work. So,
How long does it take to make a Dan Young landscape painting?
That's a good question. Sort of depends on what kind of a day I'm having. Uh-huh. On a good day, I might get one done. Sometimes I can beat on them for a week or a month, so... It varies.
You're known as a plein air artist.
That is correct, yes.
These look like oil paintings.
They're all definitely oil paintings.
It hard to do an oil painting in plein air?
Not at all. It's actually one of the easiest.
Really? I would think pastels because they dry so quickly. But no.
Well, no, but pastels, you have to layer colors. Uh-huh. So when you're trying to get a specific color out there, you have to layer multiple sticks to get it the right color. Where I get to look out there, figure out what color it is, mix it up on my palette, and put it on the panel.
Wow. How long does it take oil paint to dry?
It depends. In the summer, it'll dry a lot quicker, within 2 days. But in the winter, it could be a week. So it's actually a chemical change. It doesn't dry. So humidity, temperature, things like that have a lot to do with it.
Do you sketch first on the canvas, or do you just go right to the paint?
No, I don't. I don't sketch on the canvas, but I always do what's called a thumbnail drawing, which is a small drawing. They call them thumbnails because they're supposed to be the size of your thumbnail, but I actually do them larger than that. So I work out the composition in a small drawing.
Uh-huh. Well, I noticed on your website, which, by the way, is danyoungstudio.com, that you have 62 archived paintings on there.
That could be, yeah. I'm just glad someone's looking at my website.
Well, yeah, of course. And you know, they're gorgeous palette.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're not afraid to paint water. There's water in a lot of them.
Not at all. You know, the more you do this, the more you challenge yourself. I've been painting for about 30 years now. And when you start out, you tend to avoid those things that you don't think you can pull off. Uh-huh. And over time, the more experience you have, the more challenges you take on. And I'm to the point in my career where I love a challenge. I'll try it at least once.
Okay. Huh. How many times did you have to try painting water before it worked?
Oh, my goodness. A lot more than once. And
yeah.
Then it was snow, and then it was painting at night. And uh-huh. I'm one of those artists that I sort of focus on something. It might be night scenes, or it might be water paintings or snow paintings, and I'll go after it full bore for several months until I sort of reach a peak, and then I move to something new.
Uh-huh. I noticed a lot of snow paintings.
Yeah, I love painting snow. It's
Why?
Probably my favorite.
Why?
It's the challenge of it. When I first started, it's like, well, snow is white, so I'll just go out, take my white paint, and paint snow. Well, if you go out and stand in snow, which I have done for countless hours, and freeze your fingers and your toes, you start to learn to observe quickly and paint quickly. Uh-huh. And I've always loved the challenge of snow. So it's definitely where I really thrive to do my best work is in the winter.
You know, when you say that, I think of that old saw of, what is it, 90 different words for snow in
right,
the Eskimo
right.
language?
Yes.
And I imagine there's 90 different ways to paint snow.
There really is. And then I got the wild hair to see if I could paint it at night under a full moon.
Wow.
And then all bets were off. So it's been a challenge, but I really, like I say, I'm one of those artists that I go after something. So I would go out at night after night in a full moon in the winter and try to figure out what snow does at night.
How about that? Well, I noticed 5 or 6 paintings at night, but I don't remember any of them being snowbound.
There's probably some on there if you look, but that's something I sort of got known for is doing those.
Huh. Known how? What do you mean?
Well, in other words, when you're an artist, you get known as a specific artist doing a specific subject matter. What I have tried to do is avoid being pigeonholed. There's nothing worse when your gallery says, give us another one of those snow paintings because we know we can sell it. Well, you know, I have to sell my paintings to make a living, but I also like the challenge of doing different subjects. Like, say, right now I'm into horses. A lot of my paintings in this show have horses in them. So it's just something new for me. It's a new challenge.
I'm guessing that you're out there plein air, you're painting, and you've got a very intense focus on what your subject is, whether it's a horse or a mountain or a stream. And my experience with intense focus is that it's transcendent. There's a quality, and it doesn't happen right away, but there's a quality that kind of carries you away. Is that your experience? Well,
as you're speaking, I'm shaking my head, which I'm sure they're not seeing. But you're absolutely right. You almost get into a zone, if you will. I mean, I'm in my own world out there, and I could tell you countless stories where people have walked up behind me and said something and just sent me out of my shoes because I never heard them. You know. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It becomes a focus. You know, and the longer you can keep that concentration, you sort of get on a roll, if you will.
Did you ever see something that maybe wasn't there because of that focus? Did a door of perception open?
You know, that's one I haven't experienced. But the interesting thing is, Ben, that you mentioned that even though I paint from life or I paint existing subject, I still use a lot of artistic license. I move mountains. I move trees. I change things. I make a painting out of the scene. Mm-hmm. I've said before, Mother Nature, I can't outpaint her, so I just use her as a guideline.
That's a great line, and it never occurred to me. You know, you think of artistic license with movies and books, but not necessarily with landscape paintings.
Well, absolutely. Most people think you just set up and paint exactly what you see. And when I started as an artist, that's exactly what I did. Uh-huh. I went out trying to copy Mother Nature. And I learned that it's really about my interpretation of Mother Nature. So when I go out now, I base it off a scene. But like I say, I'll move mountains. I'll put things in that aren't there. I'll take things out that don't work. I make paintings when I'm outside as opposed to copy what I see.
I've always conceived of painting as a very emotional exercise. Is that your experience?
It is. And me, from an artist standpoint, what I really try to do is strike that viewer on an emotional level. In other words, when a viewer comes up to me and says, oh, that snow painting, it just gives me a chill. I can feel the snow. Then it's a successful painting. It's not about the details, painting every leaf on the tree or something. It's about getting the feel of a specific scene, if it's morning light or evening light or whatever. If it's a bale of hay that reminds someone of their childhood, then it's a successful painting in my book.
So if you look at those successful paintings that have accrued in your studio or in a gallery, is it a catalog of your emotional state? Can you look at an old painting and say, okay, well, that day I remember because I broke up with that girl, whatever
well,
it is.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that because in my studio, there are literally thousands of paintings. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I paint pretty much every day. So I can go back into my studio and pull a painting out of a stack. I can't tell you what year I painted it, but it takes me right back to that spot. And I've had my wife say, oh, wow, where's that? And it's just a tree on a road. And I'll say, oh, that's such and such road up out of Carbondale. And she'll go, how do you remember that? Because you're exactly right. I stood there. I studied it. I mean, I analyzed it. I agonized over it. I made a painting out of it. So they resonate on a different level with me.
Huh. Do you paint right away when you set up in a place?
The system I have, what I learned early on, I was an illustrator before I started doing fine art. And I had a whole studio full of stuff. And when I started going outside, I realized you have to pare that down to the essentials. Because as you can imagine, the light lasts. I mean, it moves quickly. So you learn to grab what you need quickly. You learn to analyze what's going to change, what's going to stay the same, what you have to get, you know, you have to get down. For example, the shadows that are moving on a hillside. You know you may only have, you know, 10 minutes before they change. So you learn to work very quickly. So the gear I have, when I'm driving down the road and I see something I want to paint, I'm set up and painting within minutes. And then 6 or 7 minutes, I'm actually painting. And that's come from experience.
Photographers revere the slanting light, the low light, when the sun is low at either end of the sky. Is it the same for you?
Absolutely.
You make a good painting?
Oh, absolutely. That's definitely the best. It's actually easier, to put it honestly with you, because you have the more dramatic light. You have those more obvious things. So I tend to paint early and late a lot, but I also like the challenge of high noon, where there's no shadows? Can you get that washed out feel of a hot summer day where there's no shadows to, you know, judge the light on? So yes, it is easier in the evening or the afternoon, but I like the challenge of painting all day. Now, the heat and the cold I don't deal with as well as I used to, but
Do you paint over canvases? Do you start a painting and then paint over it after it's dry?
No, I usually, if the horse dies and I need to get off, I scrape it. I rarely, if it's a failure, it's a failure. But it's not to say I've been playing around in the studio. There's a big difference between working in the studio and working in the field. There are times in the studio where I may pull out a painting that was a failure that has no use to me, and I may sand areas down and paint over it. I do that. But I rarely also change something I've started working on outside. When I go back in the studio early on, I thought, well, I can fix that and I can fix this. And I ruined more paintings than I ever fixed. So I have a different approach now. When I go back in the studio and I pull paintings out that I've done outside, I rarely make major changes. I may, you know, if I've got two trees that look similar, I may do some tweaking, but I tend to not repaint things. I leave them as they are. And even if they're not necessarily successful painting, there may be a passage in there that I really nailed the color and value, some notes, if you will, that really will are more beneficial than the way too many photographs I take.
Oh, so you're taking photos too?
Oh, yeah, I definitely. Digital has been both good and bad. The beauty of digital, I take pictures.
How many paintings are failures? What's your failure rate?
I will say that as I've hopefully matured as an artist, you have a lot more tools, if you will, in your toolbox. You have a lot more knowledge. So I have a tendency that I could save paintings. I'll be honest with you, pretty much every painting I do to this day, I get to that point where I go, this isn't happening. So I have to separate myself, take a breather, come back, and in most cases, I can analyze it by going into my toolbox, if you will, and figuring out where I went off track. Huh. And I can usually save them, and if not, I scrape them and move on.
Huh.
So, you know, my success rate is probably better than what it used to be, but also my standards have been raised.
Uh-huh.
So painting that I do now 10 years ago, one that I might wipe may have been a real gem 10 years ago, which is a healthy thing. I think you need to improve, always be a student.
Yeah. What are you learning these days with painting?
Actually, I've been playing around with more trying to simplify things and play more with the texture of paint. You know, believe it or not, it's frustrating when someone says, oh, I love your painting. It looks like a photograph. Well, that's not what I want to do as an artist. I want it to look like a painting. I want it to look like something Dan Young created. So that evolves over time. I've always used that phrase, I can't paint better than I know. So as my career has evolved, I'm able to handle more difficult subjects, and I'm trying to, believe it or not, simplify things, get down to the essence of the subject and leave as many details out as possible. And even though it sounds easier, it's actually harder.
You know, I think that feeling and that process probably takes place in all arts.
I hope so. Absolutely.
I hear that from musicians that I've talked to, authors, same thing.
Absolutely.
You know right away there's too many words. And
yep.
I didn't capture.
What's the least number of words I can say this in? I feel the same way. What's the least number of strokes I can put on this painting to give the viewer enough information that they can be involved in the process?
So theoretically, 20 years from now, let's say, there won't be any failures. You'll nail it every time. Right?
We can hope. You know, we can hope. And it's funny. As long as I've been doing this, I still fail. I still go out and just do bad paintings. And unfortunately, and I'm sure all artists will tell you this, it's not really artist block. Some days you just can't get with the program.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating. I make my living as an artist. I'm very fortunate. But I still have bad days, and I'm driving home, and I look over and say, oh, McDonald's is hiring. Good. There's still hope. I'll be okay. And this is after 30 years. So.
How did you get to that point that you're making a good living from it? What was the process for you?
And I started, like I mentioned earlier, I was a commercial illustrator. When you're a commercial illustrator, you have clients that call you up and say, Dan, we want this illustration of this product. And they were willing to pay me well for it. when I jumped off, I think it was 1988, decided I was going to move home to Colorado. I brought some of my clients with me, so I was fortunate. I was working through FedEx. I mean, I still had work, and I started painting. When you're painting fine art like I am, you have to be able to market it. And today, the best place, or at least at that time, the best place to market was through art galleries. So I started putting work in art galleries. The big difference was nobody needed my paintings. When I was illustrating, there was a client at the end that was willing to pay me for the product I delivered. When you're doing fine art, that's not there. So part of you wants to paint what's true to you, but the other part of you really wants to pay the mortgage. So it's a balance of how you do that, and it takes time. It really does. I did the starving artist thing for a while, and I didn't enjoy it that much. But the more I did it, when it became a full-time job painting, I improved rapidly. And then slowly you get in an art gallery, and as your work improves, collectors start to notice you, and it sort of builds on itself. It's like the snowball rolling down the hill or a wave. I mean, over time, it builds, and you hope to keep that momentum going.
Is the internet useful?
The internet changed it dramatically. When it first came online, I think collectors were kind of leery to buy something online. It was new. So I would get a lot of interest in looky-loos, and, you know, I would get emails. Well, over time, as it's become more common, people are more willing to buy a painting online. I mean, the price point of my paintings are high enough that when someone buys one, they're a collector. You know, so if they know my work, that's one thing. But when I have somebody who I don't know, you know, contact me on the internet, it always impresses me that they're willing to buy something, spend that kind of money having never seen it. So it has changed the game, and all the galleries now have really been forced to get online and to also pursue it. Social media has changed it. It's definitely a different animal.
And yet, you have a gallery opening last night.
Absolutely.
So they're still critical.
I'm very hopeful that brick and mortars will survive. I think, personally, it gives me the opportunity to meet the collectors that buy my paintings. Oh. And I think that's huge. I enjoy that. There's nothing better than opening. The opening last night, I had several collectors that I haven't communicated with in years that showed up and said, you know, I bought that painting of yours 20 years ago. I still love looking at it every day. That's huge. Uh-huh. I mean, it's nice to have that personal touch, and I hope that continues. You know, I mean, I hope the galleries are able to survive.
That's heartening to hear that, because I hear the same thing from artists, musicians.
Absolutely.
Rather. You know, it's all, yeah, they go in the studio, they record their CD, but it's still all about the live show.
Mm-hmm.
And
it
it's the same kind of thing.
It absolutely is. Yeah. I mean, I've made some very dear friends that are collectors of mine that over time, it opens wonderful doors to me. It gets me on property that I couldn't get on. It's a huge part of what I do that I hope never goes away. Hmm. You know, the big challenge is I actually just had dinner a couple of weeks ago with some young musicians, actually, two young kids that were just getting started. And it was interesting talking to them about doing the whole social media thing, the amount of effort they have to do to get recognized. Here I am, as I consider myself an old guy, going, I don't want to play. I want to paint my pictures. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to play the social media. I don't want to have to try to sell online. That's what I have the galleries for. Mm-hmm. So I'm very hopeful that they can survive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. What's next for Dan Young?
Another painting.
Yeah. Yeah. One by one by one.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You know, I'm fortunate that I absolutely love what I do.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I go painting, it's a good day.
Huh. And I'm guessing that ethic shows itself in your paintings.
I think so. You know, I'm very fortunate that my father lived long enough to see me have success. I mean, my father was old school, you know, ran his own business for years. And when I told him I was going to go to art school, of course, he's like, well, whatever. You know, there's the door. Here's some suitcase. That's your graduation present. He lived long enough to see some of my very successful shows. And that was encouraging. And that's one of the things he said, you worked very hard for what you did. You know, I mean, I wasn't this totally gifted artist that it all fell in my lap. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this for 30 years hard. It is my job. Mm-hmm. So I'm fortunate, but I think I've earned some of it.
Well, yeah, it's obvious to me from the website. You might want to check that out, dear listener, danyoungstudio.com, or go up to Cora Logos Gallery in Basalt and
Absolutely.
Check it out. I guess that show hangs until September 3rd.
Yes, correct.
Great. Dan Young, thanks for joining the program today.
Thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I did too.